Hello and welcome to the first of our Lent reflections from Streatham Vale Baptist Church. We'll be following the Archbishop of Canterbury's recommended book called Living God's Story, revealing the extraordinary love of God in ordinary ways, and it's written by Hannah Steele. There are study materials available online, and the link is included in the YouTube description should you want these materials. And physical copies can also be ordered should they be wanted. Again, see the description for more details. When I talk to my niece Aisha, she always wants to hear stories. Sometimes I barely get to say hello to her before she asks me to, "Auntie, read a book, read a book!" And let me tell you, trying to read books to children over WhatsApp video call can be pretty tricky. But Aisha's little cries of "read a book" demonstrate a deeper truth about our love and our reliance on stories. For example, when we talk to people about our days, we don't tend to list a series of facts. We weave a story about what we've been up to. We make sense of the world through stories. And even more simply than that, we just love stories, whether it's in the books that we read, the TV programmes or the films, or even just in the conversations we have with people. Stories form the backbone of our existence. But there is one story that is central to our existence, to all of history and all of eternity, and that's God's story. God's story is the greatest story of all time. But unlike most of the stories that we read or tell, the gospel is not a story that we simply listen to. It's a reality that we embody and live out. It is a story that forms our identity and gives us a sense of belonging. God's story is the living story, a story that has not yet finished, because God is inviting us to be a part of it and asking us to invite others to join in too. But what does it mean to be part of God's story? Why is God's story the greatest story of all time? Let's just reflect on some important truths about God's story. Firstly, God's story tells us that we are loved. During this pandemic, one thing that we have all learnt is not to take our loved ones for granted. We have spent almost a full year in which we cannot get physically close to the ones we care about, and it's caused so many mental health problems. And this is because we need to know that we are loved. God created us to be relational creatures, both with each other and, more importantly, with God. God created us to love and be loved. The words, "I love you," are some of the most powerful words we can say to others or to have said to us. The amazing truth of God's story is that he proclaims loud and clear that he loves us. He says to you, "I love you." One of the most famous verses in the Bible states this categorically: "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." What I love about this verse is that it isn't just words. The words "I love you" can easily be said flippantly, and in these cases they become empty words that mean nothing or very little. But God doesn't just love us with words. He loves us with actions. God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only Son to die on a cross for our sakes. God's love is a powerful, active love in which he reaches down into our darkest moments and holds out a hand in invitation. And because God extends his love as an invitation to know him and be part of his family, his story, we have to respond, either by accepting his invitation or by rejecting it. God is not forceful in pushing us to choose his love. He extends it and leaves the decision up to us. Of course, by accepting God's love, we make the best decision of our entire lives. Choosing to become a part of God's story is an incredible opportunity that we only have thanks to the grace of God. Let's never forget to thank God for his amazing invitation. But let us also help others to recognise God's invitation of love. Pray that many more may come to know, recognise and accept his amazing gift of love. God's story tells us that we are forgiven. If the words "I love you" are some of the most powerful words, then the words "I forgive you" are not just powerful, but are also among the most difficult words to say. This is because forgiveness is costly. A pastor once said, "In order for forgiveness to happen, something has to die. If you make a choice to forgive, you have to face the pain. You simply have to hurt." When we truly forgive someone for something they've done to hurt us, we have to choose to face the pain of that offence in our lives. We have to let that offence die in our mind so that we can no longer hold a grudge against it. And it's a painful process. We have to be willing to accept the hurt and the grief of the lack of trust, of the pain that that thing has caused. We have to hurt to forgive. And we can recognise these truths in our own lives when we struggle to forgive people. But it has been played out most powerfully through Jesus giving his life so that we could be forgiven. For the rebellion, sin, and wrongdoing of all humanity to be forgiven, someone had to die. And that someone was Jesus Christ, the one and only Son of God. For our wrong thoughts, words and acts, Jesus had to sacrifice his life on the cross. Jesus came to pay the cost so that we could receive God's forgiveness. In the verse that follows the verse earlier, John 3:17, it says, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." Jesus came so that we could be saved, that we wouldn't have to pay the penalty of sin. Jesus took the cost of that forgiveness upon himself so that we could be forgiven. Forgiveness is a powerful, difficult, and costly act. And yet it is one that God chose to take upon himself. And it's also an act that God instructs us to do. Not just once or twice, but over and over again. In Matthew 18, Peter asked Jesus, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to 7 times. I think it's funny that in rabbinic tradition, it was agreed that a person might be forgiven a repeated sin 3 or 4 times. And so Peter probably thought he was being super generous when he suggested up to 7 times. However, of course, Jesus' answer trumps that. He shows what it really means to forgive. "I tell you, not 7 times, but 77 times. Now, obviously, Jesus isn't recommending that we keep a tally and stop forgiving after the 77th time, but rather that we should not count the number of times we forgive, just as God does not count the number of times he forgives us. God's story tells us we don't have to fear death. "I love you" and "I forgive you" are the powerful phrases that we speak to one another. But something that we don't talk about is the topic of death. And God's story tells us an amazing, powerful thing about that topic of death. It tells us that we don't have to be afraid. During this pandemic, we have had to confront death like never before in recent memory. It's a topic that evokes fear in most people. When we face death, a sense of powerlessness overwhelms us because there is nothing that we can do that will prevent death from coming. Doctors and health professionals may delay the moment of death, but it comes to us all. And COVID-19 has only served to increase this sense of powerlessness 100-fold. There are those famous words that have been spoken over again. In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes. Many see death as the end of all things. But God's story tells us that we do not have to fear death, because death has been defeated. Where we are powerless in the face of death, Jesus shows his absolute power over it. During his earthly ministry, Jesus raised the dead to life, and then on that Easter Sunday, he himself rose again to life, proving once and for all that death has no power over God. This means that death does not have the final say for those who believe in God. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. It's such a simple statement for such a massive concept. Never again do we have to fear death, because God has promised that if we believe in Jesus, we shall not perish. When we proclaim ourselves to be Christians, we declare that Jesus is alive, death has been defeated, and our deepest fear is to be met with the joy and hope of the resurrection and of new life. When we speak of the resurrection, we are announcing a new reality that subverts all other worldviews. The resurrection changes the way we understand and live out the stories of our lives. The resurrection calls for us all to make a decision about what we believe. Will we stop and listen and believe? Or will we laugh at this so-called foolishness? Will we walk away from the greatest story of all time? Or will we draw closer and enter in to God's story of redemption and love? God's story is still being written, and he is inviting me, you, your family, your neighbours, your friends, your associates, everyone, to be part of it. How will we respond to God's story of unconditional love, unbelievable forgiveness, and everlasting life? As we begin our Lenten journey towards the cross and the empty tomb of Easter, take time to listen to God's story, to fully immerse yourself in his story, and also to tell others of God's story. Because whenever we hear an amazing story, we want to pass it on. So let's pass it on to whoever we can.